We're back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. And we are back at the 7th Annual Barry Goodnight Dinner with two more great guests. And in this segment, we're going to focus on the real cost of food. And one of our guests is the owner of the Red Door Restaurant and Wine Bar in Wellington Steak and Martini Lounge up there in beautiful Mission Hills. And her name is Trish Watlington. Trish, welcome back to the show. I think you've been on with us before, right?
I have been on with you before, and thank you so much. I'm happy to be back.
Excellent.
And Trish, for the record, I need your recipe to your biscuits and gravy.
You have to see her at the break, Richard.
Chef Miguel is here, actually. Okay. You can wander out and ask him.
Yeah, okay.
But good luck with that, Richard. A lot of times they're very protective of their proprietary information. But also in this segment, we have... the Deputy Director of Food and Technology at Friends of the Earth. It's FOE.org, and it's Kari Hammerschlag. And welcome back to the show.
Thank you, and well said on my name.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Jawohl. Anyway, I know Michelle wanted us to focus on the real cost of food.
This is the financial part of the show, Joe.
Yes, absolutely. So basically explain to people, you know, why good food costs more and cheap food probably isn't that good for us. Do you want to start with that?
I think I should let Kari start.
Okay.
Why good food costs more? Well, why do we have so much cheap food in this country? So Americans spend less as a percentage of our income on food than any country on the planet, practically. Mm-hmm. And so we're used to cheap food, and it didn't always used to be that way. In the 1960s, we spent about a third of our income on food, and now it's less than 10%. And part of that is our policy. It's our agricultural policies, which mm-hmm. are subsidizing the production of cheap raw ingredients for processed food and factory farm meat and dairy. So we have big subsidies for commodity crops like corn and soy that are the raw ingredients for the junk food.
And they have big, strong lobbies in Washington.
Big, strong lobbies in Washington. And in contrast, you know, support for organic, healthy fruits and vegetables are very, very little support in terms of policy support for those healthy foods. So, of course, that's one reason, but that's not the only reason, but that's an important one.
Let me ask you about schools a little bit. I know it's not on the topic here, but are we getting better about the quality of food in our schools at the grade school and high school level? I mean, you do hear some schools tearing out lawns, putting in gardens, and kids getting more into farming and growing things, but are we getting the...
And taking out vending machines?
So,
now,
so
Richard's with the Barry, he's got his own foundation works on this too, but... Uh-huh. Have we finally gotten the soft drinks out of the schools yet? I mean, I don't even know. Does anyone know here? Or maybe it's the wrong audience. I don't know.
Well, let me say that in terms of food in school, we have a long way to go, but we've made great progress thanks to Michelle Obama's great work and a lot of other folks who mm-hmm. have pushed for new policies in Washington. It's one of the biggest, I think, important gains that we've seen in our food policy, that we doubled the amount of fruits and vegetables that kids have on their plates at schools across the whole country. Mm-hmm. And actually, that bill right now is being kind of demolished by the Republicans in Congress. We're trying to keep it as strong as we can, but mm-hmm. we have seen increases in fresh fruits and vegetables, so that's positive. There's definitely progress, but lots more.
And if you go over to Europe, it's probably a lot. I saw a documentary recently about in France how the kids in the grade school, I mean, they actually have chefs in the school giving them.
Michael Morris.
Yeah, that was the one, Where to Invade Next.
Right.
I know Dave's seen it a few times, right?
Well, we've gone so far backwards because when I was growing up, we actually did have chefs and cooks in our kitchens, and everything was made from scratch in the schools, and kids got real food. And now way too much of it comes in processed containers, and it's already processed. I was reading something the other day about someone who was trying to bring back white milk to the breakfast menus of schools, and the teachers and the kids were protesting that they wanted chocolate milk.
For breakfast? Wow.
For breakfast.
Oh, my gosh. And I remember when I went to grade, there was a home economics. I think it was just for the girls. I don't know if they let guys in the class. Do you remember home economics?
In my high school, guys could take home ec.
I think they should teach kids how to cook. I mean, it's a good tool to have, and you know, there's nothing wrong with learning how to cook at an early age, you know?
More and more schools are putting in school gardens. That's actually become quite popular, and I don't know, you know, I think it's making an impact because kids are actually able to see where food comes from, mm-hmm. and learning that it doesn't just come on a styrofoam tray, that you know, you can grow it.
And lurking underneath all this is the obesity issue, which is, you know, wasn't asked, but obviously
it's connected. Yeah, and then also the type 2 diabetes issue.
Yeah.
Right. So people think that they're getting cheap food, but the reality is it costs a lot. They pay for it dearly.
Down the line.
So you either pay now or you pay later, but you're going to pay for it. And, you know, a lot of the true cost of food is being externalized, and we pay for it in terms of rising rates of obesity and other health, you know, other diet-related diseases that mm-hmm. are, you know, 75% of all the healthcare costs come from diet-related
illness.
It's preventable. It's not all diet. It's some exercise and lifestyle, but it's preventative. And healthy food, like fruits and vegetables, fresh fruits and vegetables are very protective. Mm-hmm. Whereas factory farm meat and dairy, if you eat too much, you're going to have higher rates of diabetes, heart disease,
and
obesity.
Isn't sugar and fructose in just about
that everything, right? And where does that come from?
Corn starch.
Comes from the corn, which is subsidized. And then there's a lot of environmental costs, too. So that's the other piece that you have to, you know.
Well, the crops that we grow have changed over time also. I mean, when hundreds of years ago, corn was actually had a high nutritional value. Now it's been genetically modified, hybrid, changed so that it is
lots of
starch and not much nutrition.
Yeah, the biodiversity is under attack, and so I hear what you're saying.
Question, how do we educate the public so that they're more willing to pay, shall we say, more money for better food? I mean, obviously, it's a fairly simple concept to say that the value is much, much greater, but a lot of people only look at price.
We're doing it because we're starting a community-supported restaurant project in our restaurant that is going to offer classes and special dinners and make more of a community and more education available to the public. So on our very small scale, that's how we're doing it. I think it's a grassroots. A grassroots kind of movement.
And I think some of the big box stores actually have organic. They're providing marketing. Organic foods. We're seeing more of that. I don't want to name names, but you know, when I say big box, you probably know what I'm thinking of. But then
one has to question where the organic food comes from, because not only are we paying for cheap food with our health, but we're also paying for it with the demise of the planet.
Yeah.
And so, organic is certainly better, but organic is not necessarily, you know, large scale agricultural organic is not necessarily better, at least for the sake of the workers and the distance that the product travels. So,
right, but it can be done really well, and particularly in San Diego, you've got the largest number of organic farms and small farms, and you know, when you pay the price of organic, you're paying for healthy soils, you're paying for healthy clean water, you're paying for more abundant water, because when you farm organically, you create soils that can hold the water, you're paying for not poisoning the pesticides in the farmers, you know, you're paying basically the real cost of the food, and it's better for all of us. And when you buy organic meat, you're not getting the antibiotics and the hormones, and when you buy factory farm meat, you're getting the antibiotics and the hormones that are giving rise to antibiotic resistance, which, you know,
so
22,000 people die every year.
So the farmers markets that are popping up more and more, would you recommend that's a good place where people should visit weekly? Or
highly recommend that. And one of the things that you get out of visiting a farmer's market is not only local organic food, but you also reduce the food waste problem, because large-scale farms throw out a lot of food because it's not standard size. Hmm. And food that's sold in a farmer's market doesn't need to be standard size like it does in a grocery store.
Huh. And the other issue I see is just the huge transportation cost and gasoline cost and so on to transport food. It is tremendously wasteful.
There you go. But Trish Watling, we have to wrap it up. We're coming up on another break here, but owner of Red Door Restaurants and Wellington Steak and Martini Lounge, Trish Watling, thanks for being our guest this segment. And also Kari Hammerschlag, Deputy Director of Food and Technology at Friends of the Earth, FOE.org. All these websites will be on our site, by the way, folks, at iwaymoney.com. We'll come right back with another segment from the Barry Goodnight Dinner. Hang on.